Hi, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Telerik DevCraft by Progress. They're the most comprehensive developer toolkit for building modern apps on the market today. With more than 1,100 Telerik.NET and Kendo UI JavaScript components and controls, you can easily build modern, high-performance web, mobile, and desktop apps and chatbots. The toolset includes reporting solutions, automated testing and productivity tools, and it comes with a range of support options, thousands of demos, free online training, and more. Progress Software is amongst the new corporate sponsors of the .NET Foundation, and they recently announced support for Visual Studio 2019, now in preview, and the new .NET Core 3.0, so you can use their tools with all the latest great software from Microsoft. For more information, visit Telerik, that's Telerik.com/Hanselminutes. That's Telerik.com/Hanselminutes. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Regine Gilbert. She is a senior user experience designer at the Gilbert Consulting Group, an adjunct professor at New York University, an instructor at General Assembly. You were a user experience lead at Ralph Lauren. I mean, you're doing some really cool stuff.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
So I saw a video of yours on YouTube where you were talking about the value of user experience. And you've pointed out in a lot of the things that you've talked about online that you're really excited, not just about user experience, but about accessible user experience, inclusive user experience for everybody.
Yes, I am very excited about, well, user experience is, I love it. I have been working in it for the last 5 years and I have enjoyed every moment of it. And I got into accessibility around the time I got into UX. And I didn't really know. I literally woke up one day and I said to myself, I want to make the world a more accessible place. And I didn't know what that meant, except I think I Googled accessibility and I found an accessibility meetup here in New York City. And I went to the meetup, and at this meetup, I met people of all kinds. It was amazing. I met a woman who is blind. She wasn't born blind, but she was blind. And I told her what I did. I said, I'm a user experience designer. She said, what is that? And I said, well, we make websites and mobile products usable for people. And she asked me a question and it always stuck with me. She asked me, do people like you, designers, think about people like me? Mm-hmm. And I sat there for a moment thinking, I don't think I've heard other designers really talk about, and again, I was new in the field, but I didn't really hear anybody talking about accessibility or making things for people who are blind. And I said, in all honesty, no, but I will make sure they think about it when I talk about it. Mm-hmm. So from there, in some ways, I made a promise to make sure that whatever I worked on, whatever I taught, I would include accessibility and making sure that websites and other digital products were usable for everyone or a majority of people.
Isn't that so powerful, though? Like, it sounds silly when you think about it. I mean, it sounds silly in retrospect when you say, oh, I have a blank friend. But when you meet someone, a person who isn't who you are, you know, blind, disabled, diabetic, black, white, whatever, that personal connection reminds you that that person exists. And then you want to meet as many different kinds of people as you possibly can. I want to meet people from all over, of all kinds. And then I want to make products that make them all happy and that they're all able to use.
Yeah. I tell my students this all the time, and I have to remind myself of it, that we think about ourselves the most. Mm. And so when we are making products for other people, it's hard for us, and especially in UX, a big part of it is empathy and getting an understanding of other people. So it's getting out of your own head and actually thinking about someone else is a challenge for a lot of people. But the minute you can do that, what an amazing thing it is. I mean, the first time I experienced it truly was during my undergraduate degree. I went to Arizona State University, and I studied human behavior. specifically intercultural and organizational behaviors. And one of my professors had this assignment. So I'm an African American woman, and I went to a primarily white school. And this particular class on intercultural communication was primarily white. And so the assignment that was given to a majority of the students in the class, from my recollection, is that they had to think about what it would be like if the next day they woke up and they were Black. Mm-hmm. And when they came back, like a week later or something, their minds were just so open because they had never, ever thought about being anybody other than who they were. And so that was my first taste of empathy, I guess, in a lot of ways, and getting to think about someone else and seeing how they reacted. Because I had no idea. Me, I think about being Black all the time. But for some people, they literally wake up and they don't think about, you know, something else. Unless something happens to you physically, or, you know, you break an arm or you break a leg, you generally don't think about anyone else other than yourself.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that you do have those moments though. I just before we got on the show here, I went and picked up some teriyaki, and when I was walking to the car, I had a moment as I was walking across the parking lot. I was like, I'm walking pretty well. My back doesn't hurt. I'm vertical, I'm mobile, I'm ambulatory, and I'm walking to my car, and I'm going to get in my car without pain. And the reason that I think that is because I spent 2 years with really non-trivial back issues to the point where you're hurting so much you've forgotten what not hurting feels like.
Wow.
And that every once in a while, maybe I would say a couple times a month, I'll just have a moment where I'm like, oh, you know, my back is okay. What a blessing that is. And that is one example that is an opportunity in my life or a thing that has happened that's made me, I think, hopefully more empathetic towards people who are perhaps less mobile.
Right. Yeah, it makes you think.
Scary stuff.
Yeah.
It really does. I was teasing a coworker about bringing cake to work because I'm also a type 1 diabetic. And they're like, oh, would you like some cake? And I was like, no, but thanks for that painful reminder of my lifelong struggle with diabetes. And they, you know, it was all in good fun.
Right.
But they were like, they mentioned afterwards, they're like, I never thought about that. I'm like, yeah, man, every carbohydrate, every cookie, enjoy, because you don't think about it. And I'm counting it. Yeah. And I've got the charts to prove it.
Yeah. I have a nut allergy and people are like, oh, you can't have almonds? And I was like, absolutely not. I can't have any of that.
Yeah, exactly. So is the answer to empathy and design to expose as many people as possible to as many other people?
I think that's part of it. And I think another part of it is being woke. And when I say woke, I don't mean it in the sense that's in the news and what's out there and what people say, but my definition, and well, it's not mine, but I found it somewhere, is that you need to watch, observe, question, and explore. Woke. And that means...
Oh, wow, with a Q.
Yeah, with a Q. Woke with a Q. So that means, you know, not only watching things outside of you, but watching yourself. How are you reacting to others? What are you, you know... What are you doing with others? Like, what, do you question the things that you do? And then looking at the outside world and going, well, why doesn't this thing work for me? Why doesn't this product work for me? What is wrong with this damn form? Why can't I fill it out? You know, it's like that kind of stuff. And especially from a design perspective, designers solve problems, right, in the world. And the way you do that is not by being stuck and looking at your phone the whole time. It's by looking out in the world and seeing what can be made better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going through a door, and my wife always goes and pushes on the door near the hinge side. And she said, what's wrong with me? Why do I keep doing that? I'm like, it's got nothing to do with you. Don't beat yourself up. That door has a design problem because you can't tell by looking at the push bar which side the hinge is on.
Yeah. We've all had that experience with the door. That's a classic UX example of usability, right? Do you get the handles on the outside? Do you pull it? you don't know. I mean, it's always, mm-hmm. we've all
why
had
Why did
that
she blame herself?
Because we always blame ourselves for bad design, I think. It's not us. It's really thinking about who that they think, if you put a handle on something, for me, I want to pull it. But I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, again,
and first reaction is like, what's wrong with you?
I mean, I'm looking at a door right now. It has a handle on both sides.
Yeah.
And I would need to pull it in order to open it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Everybody's different, though. I might be backwards. I don't know.
Or left-handed or right-handed, yeah. or, you know, whatever the opposite is.
Yeah.
When I was doing online banking many, many years ago, we needed to make our site 508 compliant or section 508 compliant, which everyone thought just meant putting alt tags on pictures.
Right.
But really, it meant making it so the blind could bank.
Right.
And they had us install JAWS, which was a popular screen reader at the time. And we had to turn off our monitors and work for a day. And that was an extreme example of forcing empathy.
Right. It made you think, wow, did I code that the right way? Did I design that the right way? I can't get to the next thing. I don't know how to get to the next thing, right? When you don't know how to go about it if no one designs or develops it in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Are there ways to force that without necessarily making everyone code blind for a day or a week?
Yeah, I like to tell people, see if you can go through a website just using the keyboard alone. Because not everyone can use a mouse. I actually have a friend who had a traumatic stress injury to his hands. And so he was no longer able to use a mouse because he couldn't hold the mouse. So he had to learn how to maneuver with the keyboard and only using the keyboard. So it's a great test to see if something is accessible just by using the keyboard. I mean, back in the day, you know, when the web first came out, people use the keyboard, and a lot of people actually still use the keyboard because the shortcuts are much faster for them.
Yeah, that's I've actually had that happen where I thought something was accessible, but then you get to the end of the process and the OK button can't be pressed, or I can't tab my way to add or cancel, or they expect me to memorize a hotkey, or a hotkey I did memorize doesn't actually work. Like escape doesn't do what you expect, or enter doesn't do what you expect.
I think we all experience that all the time. We assume that the tab is going to take us to the next thing, and when it doesn't, what a mess.
Yeah, exactly. And how do you unlearn those things, or how do you teach those things?
Yeah. It's really thinking about the hierarchy too, I think, from a design perspective. And when I teach my students, what is the hierarchy of this page? Where are people going to go first? And when I do see sites that are done well for accessibility, at the very, very top, it'll say skip to content. That's exactly what I need. I need to skip to content. I need to skip all this stuff. Whether if I'm using a screen reader or if I'm just using the keyboard, what a gift it is to skip all this crap that I don't need and just get to the content that I do.
See, now you're making me feel bad about my own site, and I'm wondering if I need to go and run some tools on my own site.
If you add skip to content and you bring it straight to the content, that's always a nice little bonus, I think.
Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, I hope you're enjoying this podcast. You know, I've done over 650 podcasts, so I must enjoy doing it, and I hope you enjoy listening. But if you enjoy stories about the people behind the technology you use, you should also check out the Greater Than Code podcast. They focus on the human side of software development. They've got stories of inclusivity and accessibility from the people you don't normally hear from. Search for Greater Than Code in your favorite podcast app, or check out greaterthancode.com. So we talked about visual aspect of things and talked about somewhat, motor abilities. But there's also more subtle things, like not everyone is necessarily has perfect vision or has no vision.
Right.
There's a gray area, no pun intended.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people use Instagram. I use Instagram. And what I have seen is there's a lot of content out there, video content, that does not have any captioning. And a majority of users who use Instagram actually just scroll through. they don't have the sound on because, one, it's a little jarring when you have the sound on and just different people have different kind of very loud or just boisterous things, you know, happening on their Instagram. But when you can see the closed captioning, when you can see what someone is saying, right, on the screen, mm-hmm. you don't need to turn on the sound. You can read it. And that's a nice thing to have. It's just, for me, I'm a closed caption person when I watch TV. I have a friend who Netflix just added recently, I believe, audio. So audio description. And she is fully sighted, but if she's cooking something, she likes to use the audio description so she can still know what's going on. And although the audio descriptions are for people who are visually impaired, it's something that could really benefit all of us when we might be doing something else, but we still want to know what's going on. And the cool thing, I think, about accessibility and making things accessible is they really benefit all of us. So many things. We all text today because that was actually made for people who were deaf. So it's these little things that can make a big difference.
You just made me realize that I sometimes listen to audiobooks on the way, you know, when I drive from Portland up to Seattle to my job, and there's about 4 hours there, so it's an opportunity to listen to audiobooks. I could, quote unquote, watch Netflix in the car by just listening to the audio description. And that's just another example where these things are for everybody. They make everyone's life
yeah,
better.
I mean, that's how cool is that? That you could be like, well, I watched that movie on my drive. And they'll be like, what? What did you do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll put the phone in the trunk and I'll hook the Bluetooth up and I'll listen to the audio background. Yeah. That's slick.
That's cool.
Yeah. So there's also color contrast. I've talked about this before. My boss is red-green colorblind, mm-hmm. but there's a whole bunch of color blindness. It's more subtle than just one or the other.
I think there's four different types. And an example I often like to give is it was 2015. It was a color rush game for the NFL. It was the Buffalo Bills and the New York Jets. The Buffalo Bills were wearing mm-hmm. all red. The New York Jets, am I getting this right? Were wearing all green and they were playing on a green field. So you had red, green, and a green field. And about, I think, 13 million people in the US have red, green colorblindness, a lot of them men. And I just remember people on Twitter being mad because Twitter and sports mm-hmm. are just so entertaining. Together, but people were mad because they could not tell if you know picture a red team, a team wearing red, a team wearing green, and a green field, and red and green look gray to you. So you have two teams which you can't distinguish their uniforms on a field that looks like the uniforms they're wearing.
Yeah,
it was a big deal. So the NFL actually came out and said, you know, we forgot to incorporate colorblind people in our testing of this. And then the next year in 2016, they came out with white uniforms because you could distinguish people who have colorblindness can distinguish between white and another color. So I think they still mm-hmm. to this day do color rush, and you'll see even different I think NBA does this color where they all wear one color. But they will wear, one team will wear white and the other team will wear color.
Yeah. Yeah. That was meant to be a big moment, the Color mm-hmm. Rush campaign. It is November of 2015. And they say 8% of men are colorblind. So apparently 8% of them got on Twitter and expressed their distaste.
Yeah, they weren't happy at all. They're like, this game is a nightmare. I can't tell which team is my team. It was really hard for people to see.
And when these things happen, we always ask ourselves, like, how did they not know? How did this, whatever this, you know, crisis of the day is, happen? Someone should have known. Someone should have asked someone. It comes down to a failure of testing and a failure of asking people to test.
Yeah. And even this past summer, because, you know, when you think about accessibility, you know, people think about people who are blind, there's cognitive issues, there's mobility issues, and there's hearing. Mm-hmm. And so this past summer, the movie The Incredibles came out. Mm-hmm. A few weeks, I think maybe 1 week or two after the movie came out, a warning came out. And the warning was that the movie included some flashes because when people went to the movies, they were having seizures.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Because it was a big deal. It wasn't. It's 2018 and we're still making things that aren't only, you know, they're annoying to people who may not have that reaction of having a seizure, but anything too flashy, I don't like it. And I don't have that reaction, but to have such a big movie, have that happen, that's a pretty big deal. Right. To see. So, yeah.
It's also worth pointing out that after that, that happened, not only did they add the warning, but they also changed the film itself for the digital release. There was an overlay, right, of strobing, and they strobed it without strobing it. They toned it down for the DVD.
Right. Yeah. So this, I mean, that could have been potentially prevented if it had been run through certain testing, because you need to think about this. Yeah. I mean, there was a case, I think the Pokemon, it was years ago in Japan, where like 700 kids had seizures because of a Pokemon episode.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, because of the flash.
Yeah,
and then they replayed it on the news.
Removing this stuff doesn't, it isn't, it's not, it doesn't hurt anyone to think about inclusivity in this way. Like, it didn't make the movie, the DVD that we saw, less than the theater version just because we removed some strobes. It just simply made it so everyone can see it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So where are some tools that I can go to, like, run on my website to make sure that I am accessible?
So I'm a huge fan of webaim.org. They have a great color contrast tool. There's also so much information. They've broken down the web content accessibility guidelines in a way that is easily digestible. If you go and look at the it's called WCAG, but if you go look at the website, you might be overwhelmed. But I think WebAIM does a really good job of looking and breaking things down for people. And they also have a Chrome plugin you could use. Mm-hmm. Another suggestion I have would be taking a look at Equal Entry. They're a agency out of New York City, but they have wonderful blog posts. And the owner of the company is a man named Thomas Logan, who also runs the accessibility meetup in New York City. They also have a ton of information if you're wanting to get to know more about web accessibility or digital products and accessibility. Mm-hmm. They're also a great great source of information as well.
So you can run the tools and get kind of a sense of what's wrong. You can get a score or a number, but then you could also potentially hire an expert to do like an actual audit of your material.
Yeah, I think if you're working with a company, you'll want someone, a professional, to come in and audit, but it's a good first pass to go through your website using the WebAIM tool.
Mm. One of the things that I found really interesting at the WebAIM website was a survey that they did on visual impairment, right? And this kind of speaks to what we talked about before, that there's a gradient from completely unable to see, very poor vision, up to moderate. There's glare sensitivity, contrast sensitivity, field of vision issues, and color blindness. It isn't just an on or off. It's not a bit.
Right. I think we've all had the glare issue with our phones, even with the iPads, different things. So yeah.
Yeah. Someone also had told me that they did not realize what their website would look like once those blue light blockers people have been using.
Mm-hmm.
And their website became very unflattering when it had this, the orange filter applied to it. I hadn't even thought about that one.
I use the filter all the time because I actually have a sensitivity to very bright things. Really? So I keep it on all day.
Hmm.
All day it's on with that tint, and people are like, "What's wrong with your phone?" I said, "Nothing is wrong with your phone, and your phone is way too bright for me to look at. Can you turn it down? I can't stand a bright screen. I don't know what it is."
That's so interesting.
It's so interesting. And speaking of color contrast, I was actually watching a game with Golden State. So I like sports, obviously. I was watching a game with Golden State with my partner, and we were looking at trying to see the score, but they had yellow and white. So basically the background was yellow and the score was white. And I said, I can't see the score. I'm going to tweet at them, right? Uh-oh. And I tweeted, I tweeted at ESPN, I tweeted at NBA, I hashtag 811Y, I hashtag accessibility. I was like, and I took a photo of it and I said, I cannot see the score. You need to check your contrast and you need to check your, I don't know what I said. You need to check your accessibility. And within 10 minutes, they changed it. And my partner, he tells me, he's like, you did that. You changed it. And I go, I did not. I don't think I did. But a couple people did retweet it. And I said, I don't think they're looking at Twitter. I think somebody said, hey, we can't see the score. But, you know, even that kind of thing, it's just, it's a constant. It's not just for people with disabilities thinking about it. It's really for all of us. All of us have different things. And there are certain things that we can see better than others.
Yeah. I was telling my children recently, everybody's got something. And you might not be able to see it.
Not every disability has a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people think, because I've had people come up to me after I've done talks and say, oh, you know, I have MS and nobody knows it. So I'm so glad you did this. And some people have, you know, shame talking about their disability, and then they're they don't want to talk about it, but there are others who do. And, you know, so hopefully people will start thinking about themselves, right? When they get older. I like to throw out the statistic that in the year 2035 in the United States, we will have more old people than young. And if we are not creating products for our older selves, then what are we doing?
You know, that is a really interesting one. I don't know about you, but I tend to run smaller fonts, right? You've seen all the people who like to show their text editors with like their 8-point fonts. But inevitably, I'll be on an airplane next to someone who's on a Kindle, an older person, or on an iPhone, and they've got that 24 or that 30-point font. Yeah. And I'll kind of chuckle, you know, oh, I don't have to do small fonts. Well, not yet, you know, I don't have to do it yet. But it's going to sneak up on me, and that font's going to ever so slowly get bigger and bigger.
And again, that's me with the big font. I have big fonts. Font,
high con- so big font, dim screen.
Yeah. I do. People are like, why is your font so big? And I was like, why is yours so small?
I don't want people reading my texts.
I'll read my text. I don't care. It's okay. You could read my text. It's fine. I have nothing to hide here.
Yeah. So you're exercising all of these different tools while you're building the tools.
I do. I like to play around with the accessibility on my phone. I have so much to learn because there's so many different things to learn out there. There's just a lot. And so I love the thing that I love about design, and the thing that I love about accessibility, is that I'm constantly learning. I learn from my friends with disabilities. I learn from myself. There's a big saying in the disability community is nothing about us, without us. And I made a point to, I'm writing a book, and there's going to be code in the book. And so the technical reviewer of my book is actually deaf, and I am learning so much from her about how she navigates, she told me the story of how she wanted to listen to this podcast because she heard so much about it, but she can't hear, and there were no transcripts available. And so she actually wrote the person, and this is a very popular podcast. I can't remember the name of it, but she'll mention it, I think, in the book. And she wrote the person, and the person said, oh my goodness, I'll definitely transcribe that episode you're looking for. And I'm going to go back and transcribe all my episodes because I feel like I'm missing out on a whole audience, which is so true.
That one hits home because I actually, when I first started a couple hundred episodes, I had a court reporter make me PDFs. And then I had a formal transcription service. And then I had a startup that was using AI to make transcriptions. Mm-hmm. Here's the sad part. I ran out of money. It was a couple bucks a minute to do the subscriptions, and you're doing 2 or 3 hours of shows every month. You know, you're looking at several hundred dollars to go and do that. So, you know, here I am espousing, you know, accessibility, but I think the last 30 or 40 shows, in fact, don't have transcriptions because it's just very, very difficult. I'd love to have someone maybe who's listening sponsor the transcriptions, and I'll go back and I've got 300 hours of shows. We could go and retranscribe the entire thing and make it searchable. That'd be amazing.
You put it out there. So now it's going to happen.
I hope so. Isn't that the thing though? You put it into the universe to manifest it.
Yeah. You put it out there. So that's going to happen. Transcription is coming. Coming back.
I appreciate all of the stuff that you've manifested in your career as a user experience designer, as an educator, and now you're an international public speaker, and people can check you out on your website.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Fantastic. We've been talking with Regine Gilbert, and this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.